beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, coming up on 10 minutes into hour two. Joe Clancy is going to join us in close to a half hour. As soon as we're done with Dick, we'll get to Joe, and we'll get his impressions for the action on Saturday at Far Hills as we build up to the Grand National. In fact, Guy Torsalieri sent me a fabulous picture that I'll put up. He sent me a great shot of, oh my God, it looks beautiful. Wow. So, Far Hills on Saturday. Speaking of fall foliage, I can't imagine the foliage I don't think you're going to miss the fall foliage, Sid, down there in Tampa. Good morning.
Steve?
Do palm trees?
Me?
Yeah. Do palm trees, do they? They don't change color.
No. They just dry. They just get dry.
Exactly, and those shards fall off, and that's the whole thing. No. That's a question. I'm gonna ask you that question. Do you and Cece miss the season so far? Has that kind of set in?
And not really.
No.
Because, you know, it just goes from hot to cold in New York and Brooklyn. You know?
That's true. It's not like it used to be.
That's right.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. Sid, we've got a bunch of things that we got to do, and the sale result very quickly, good start to OBS, and they'll do the open session today, and they got a lot of horses to sell today, actually. But our friends the Greens, two $210,000 purchases, a Matoli colt bred by Angela Ingenito, a Florida bred, and the other factor filly. So both of the sexes, $210,000, the session leaders, and you could presume, I suppose, the sale toppers, bought by DJ, and this one Hickstead Farm bred, a factor filly. So solid numbers getting going at OBS.
Yeah, it seems like the Greens have been buying quite a lot lately and actually showing a lot of success on the track. So it appears that, you know, they're expanding their operation successfully.
Very much. And, in fact, the conversation we had with them at Keeneland, and then Wonder Wheel. And in fact, we can fold Wonder Wheel's effort into the discussion. We'll come back to the other piece of news today, the fall crop. We'll come to back. We'll discuss that with that other topic I asked you about. But let's talk about the grade 1 2-year-olds first, Sid, and Into Mischief. Getting Wonder Wheel. Violence continues his very steady drumbeat of precocity. Forte wins the Breeders' Futurity in an exciting running over the Brad Cox Loggins. And then in California, the bittersweet results. I mean, the two Arrogates, Cave Rock and Tell Me No Lies, that's really got to stick in the, I don't want to say craw, that's a bad, I don't want to suggest it that way. It's really got to hurt the Judmont team to see Arrogate producing these horses.
Yeah, it's, it's bittersweet. I think, he's got three crops, two at the races so far, and within those two crops racing, two-year-olds, which aren't, they haven't even fully raced, and a full crop of three-year-olds through October, you've got three grade one winners, which is a really good total for a young horse. And, with him, the expectation is that they're going to get better as they get older, too. So, that's another thing to keep in mind. And, I kind of addressed this issue before. He was the last good son of Unbridled Song to go to stud. There was a lot of weight on his shoulders as perhaps the savior of this Unbridled Song sire line. Liam's Map, of course, has shown that he's an excellent stallion. But Arrogate now has a chance to continue his male line, certainly with Kay Brock. He's looked really exceptional, and he's going to have a job as a stallion. I noted that, Dubai Millennium had just one crop, and from that one crop he got Dubawi. And Dubawi has just, become, he's the leading stallion in Europe this year, in fact. And when you consider he's going up against, the Frankels, the Galileos, the Kingmans, and that's pretty impressive. He's an outstanding stallion. And the point is that, sometimes sire lines get saved by just one little link, and maybe it's going to be Cave Rock down the road for Unbridled Song as well, the Williams Map.
Well, and of course, we don't know. Who knows, Sid, what else, what else comes behind this assortment of Arrogates, right?
Yeah. And there's other kid called Artorias, too, Chad Brown has, he could develop as well. So, it's great to see that this horse is, getting really high quality runners, and actually this past week he had a bunch of winners too. So they're really percolating right now.
We'll also talk about Justify in a second. We'll come back to him in a minute, but let's go to the results at Keeneland, and. Let's look at Forte, because it's been a while, not that we don't touch on Violence, but it has been a while since we dug into a Violence pedigree. Let's see what this looks like.
Forte, yeah.
Yeah.
The really interesting thing about Violence, before we look at the pedigree, is that he's had some really good horses, but one thing that's been interesting about them, and you mentioned the precocity, but more so, he's been siring a lot of speed horses. You know, he's got that really good, fast gray horse at Three Chimneys, for example, whose name escapes me at the moment. I think I mentioned him. Mentioned him last week. You know, the really good-looking sprinter, fast. It's almost like violence. It's
volatile. Volatile. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Between volatile and Mottoli, there's got to be a way to institutionalize the somehow, because volatile. Everybody's struggling to come up with volatile, and yet it feels like he's poised for success.
Yeah, he's a great looking horse. And, yeah, he could be another big stallion for Three Chimneys, by the way, the way they're set up. 4K, by the way, is out of a blame there. And the next dam is by Forestry. And the dam after that is by Seattle Slew. The dam after that is by Fapiano. It's a really... It's a pedigree that's set up right. He cost only $110,000 for that Ripoli St. Elias stallion buying group. And I'm sure they've got, you know, other horses that are poised to show. This one was obviously a more inexpensive horse. But, you know, obviously among the top two-year-old goals this year. And it's notable that Blame is also the broodmare sire, I believe, of the colt he beat, Loggins, who ran a great race, and only his second start for Brad Cox. And Loggins is a ghost of a colt from a Blame mare. And, you know, he was purchased for $460,000 for another stallion buying group, you know, that they call themselves the Brad Cox Colts Group. So, you know, a thread under the surface is what we're seeing. If you look at Cave Rock, if you look at the horse that ran second to Cave Rock, he's owned by... the Avengers group. Cave Rock is owned by the Three Amigos, Pegram, and his two friends. And you've got the Brad Colts group, the Brad Cox Colts group, and the Ripoli St. Elias group. You're seeing all these groups that have formed by these colts. They're really starting to show, aren't they? As when you look at the ownership, it's tough to break through because they seem to be very, very good at identifying, potential colts. And this weekend, certainly, they were dominating the races.
You know, that that's funny. I hadn't really thought of it that way. But you look at, I mean, here we've talked about DJ Stable and their aggressive posture, and Len and John laid it out for everybody and why they're operating the way they are. And then, you know, here's Ripoli and Viola with Forte. And we talked to Mike Pegram last week. And he talked about what they're doing. They're enjoying probably they probably have the best roster of runners, since they assembled. And even when Pegram operated as a solo flyer with Midnight Lude and Silver Bullet Day, you're right. There's a lot of that. And you know, then fold in what we talked about, touched on yesterday with Eclipse and Grand Motion, and you know, Nest wins again. I mean, not that was going to be any kind of a surprise, but you know, a lot of the outfits that operate with a real focus and with you know, a certain posture, Sid, they're seeing success and consistent success.
Yeah, it just also shows you you know, how good their teams are to isolate these prospects.
Yeah.
You know, for Jacob West, for Repoli, and one of the agents for Repoli and St. Elias, Liz Crow for the Brad Cox Colts group, Donato Lanny for some of the Avengers groups, and with Baffert, as well as the Three Amigos. David Ingordo, behind, you know, horses like Flightline. What is happening is, and it's very similar to baseball scouting, which I have a lot of experience with. They're scouting these horses early, and you know how we make fun of baseball players and basketball players being scouted even while they're high school, even earlier, middle school. Well, a lot of these guys, they just don't come to the sale and look at a horse for the first time. And, you know, David Ingordo, for example, saw Flightline as an early, you know, as a short yearling at Jane Lyon's farm, and of course, he gets to see all the horses that reins in super early. When I was at Three Chimneys, Hillendale, a month or so ago, and John Segura was driving me around. Well, guess what? We went past a yearling barn, and Liz Crow was there looking at yearlings. So a lot of these guys are very sophisticated. They've got great agents who have track records, who know what they're looking at. And this concept, Steve, of trying to find these colts has really sharpened and gotten acute. Windstar and China Horse Club, there's another group. Of course, they own Life is Good, right? And that's Elliot Walden and David Hanley. So you get all these super talented people, MB Magnier and Paul Shanahan and the Coolmore group, for example. And you're going to start to see, even more separation, because these guys, the guys with the money, are hiring some of the best scouts to look at these young horses. And that is a very serious asset to have when you're shopping at these sales. I mean, I wrote about Donato Lanny today in the TDN. It's out in the Wednesday piece. And, you know, part of the reason I wrote about him was not only the success of Cave Rock this weekend, which is part of his involvement with Baffert, but he's also, for example, a agent for George Krikorian, for whom he got Warlike Goddess for, you know, $30,000. He got another English Channel filly, Last Call, who was a two-year-old who won the Natalma last month for $30,000. Moira, the Queen's Plate winner, he got for $150,000. These are not horses that were meant for Baffert, but, you know, his skill is there to be able to find the horse for the right environment. And these were turf horses going long, for example, not the type of horses that Baffert touches. So the point is that, you know, these guys have great eyes, and I have to mention John Moynihan, the Stone Street advisor and agent for Stone Street. You know, again, look at all the success Stone Street has. So basically, you've got a lot. This game is getting so sophisticated that the money guys are able to hire the best talent to spot the talent. And again, like I said, it was very evident this weekend.
No, well framed. I'm glad we you know, kind of folded it all together that way. I mean, and a lot of times we dig in, you know, certainly during the three-year-old run-up to Triple Crown, we dig into these pages. But that really does bring a lot of this into focus. And I'm just looking at...
Yeah, the process. This process is coming into focus. Exactly.
I'm looking here, too, because this is always fun. You know, Southgate Farm.
I think we should mention also, sorry for interrupting, there are a couple of breakthroughs this weekend in terms of, you know, you mentioned the two Keeneland stakes. Well, Mendelsohn got his first stakes
winner, yes,
which was in a grade two race, as did Oscar Performance.
Yep.
Ran 1-2 in a grade two race. So those two stallions are off the mark as well. Off the stakes mark.
And I don't know if you caught my reference to him either, Sid. I think I mentioned this on Monday when I was doing the overall weekend recapping. But Creative Cause, very quietly and without fanfare, just continues to get all different kinds of horses, and that was put into perspective with the Knickerbocker win by the older King Cause, and then how about that nice two-year-old it looks like that Mullins has, and in Paxawala.
Yeah, those horses like Creative Cause are, you know, the small owner, the small breeder's friend, you know. These are horses... horses by Creative Cause don't get caught in the... they're not under the microscope for these types of buyers we just spoke about, but they are in the wheelhouse for buyers that, you know, under these guys. And so there's always methods to try to capitalize, you know, to find... And you just hit on one right there. That stallion right there is an excellent... stallion of proven runners. You know, Blame, which I just mentioned as a broodmare sire, is a great sire to breed to. I pray learn. Really good point there that it's you don't have to give up in this game because there's always that opportunity to find a horse. And, you know, Warlight Goddess, was led into Keeneland in September and did not get a bid. 1,000 RNA. You and I could have bought her. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Let me slip one thing in, Sid, too, on the... on this pedigree, because I still have Forte in front of me, and there's sort of an interesting name to note in here. The Chatfield Taylors in Virginia, Morgan's Ford.
Right.
This is a product of their female families.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because so we get back to
that first. They looks like they bought the second dam or the third dam and bred the second dam. Or yeah, Queens Plaza, the Blame.
Was that them?
Yes. Yep. Southgate owned, but
right.
Morgan's Ford. Yeah, Morgan's Ford bred, and what they did was looks like they had acquired Queens Plaza, her dam, and Interesting. She and it looks like they got her for a relative bargain. Was bred by Classic Thoroughbreds, and this is an interesting. I'm just kind of thumbing through here. Seattle Slough mare, Kew Garden, going back a little bit. The Kellys.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great family that eventually goes back to La Troyenne.
There's bait. Yep, stolen base. Bases full. Baby. Striking. Yep. There. Yep. Yeah. 2 weeks in a row. That's 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. Who was the one last week? Which of the? I think there was was one of the 2 year olds was also La Troyenne.
Yeah, there've been quite a few that have been
amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah.
Might have been Blazing Sevens, actually, the Good Magic. So 2 weeks in a row, a fairly young sire at Hill and Dale producing important Grade One winners. Blazing Sevens in the Champagne and Forte in the Breeders' Futurity. Sid, a couple of other...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the Hillendale Stallion, have been on absolute fire.
Yeah.
From Curlin all the way down to their first crop horses, Good Magic, with the only freshman stallion with a Grade One winner so far, and Army Mule. Then you've got Violence right now humming. You've got McLean's Music with Jackie's Warrior. You've got Goat Zapper with Moira. Johnny Sakura's operation is just clicking on all cylinders right now.
Not very much. Also, on before we talk about that topic of young mares, I promised a quick aside about Justify, and nowhere was that more evident and in focus than on Sunday, where the two Justifies out of the Baffert barn came together. And the Zidane team was disappointed on Saturday when they could not keep up with Cave Rock with a Jazzy. But then they turn around. Arabian Lion looks like the goods. This one out of the Distorted Humor mare Unbound, bred by Bonchance Farm. And Elwood Blues, this time for Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman, chasing home Arabian Lion. So the Justify story is, writing itself.
It's an incredible story. And then, you've also got Philly Justique just got G1, a graded placing in her second start. Disappointed a lot of people by not continuing with that visually impressive maiden score, but it was only her second start, and she's already now graded placed. Gandolfini was fourth in the Cave Rock. He's getting a lot of really good runners, and like I said before, anything we see at two with him is just pure gravy, because he didn't race until he was three. The Eddie Tours. And you're not going to expect that kind of stuff. But nevertheless, these horses that trained, Baffert had trained, the really good stallion prospects, which he only got late in his life, like Pioneer of the Nile, got American Pharaoh, and then American Pharaoh is turning into quite this really good stallion. You've got Justify now with his first crop doing this. You've got Arrogate, which we already discussed. So you're starting to see some of the Baffert Ray stallions show a lot more than had earlier. Justify particularly is a really interesting horse because as a son of Scat Daddy, he... Mendelssohn and Caravaggio in this country. Caravaggio came from Coolmore, Ireland, And then in Europe, you know, the horse that's really streaking right now and making a name for himself with two-year-olds and sprinters, sprinter milers even, is another Scat Daddy, No Name Never, Wesley Ward trained Scat Daddy. So he's part of a really vibrant sire line, and you know, that's got some ramifications too, because he's going to get a really good chance next year when everybody knows or assumes what we're seeing this year really is amazing, but the real performances should come next year. And that's what happened with Gunrunner, too. Gunrunner came out with those 2-year-olds, obviously, but continued at 3, just as arrogant and Justify was. Gunrunner, you know, better at 3 and 4. Preakness winner, early voting, Arkansas Derby winner, Cyber Knife, Pennsylvania Derby winner, and Santa Anita Derby winner in Taba. The projection for Justify is really huge.
Yeah, looking at these two pedigrees quickly, Arabian Lion, I mentioned, is out of a Distorted Humor mare. So you've got the Stormcat line, you know, and of course, you know, getting to Scat Daddy through, and then Justify, and then the Distorted Humor side, Raise a Native line, Mr. Prospector 49er, Distorted Humor, Female Family, Distorted Humor, AP Indy Mare, Possibility. Personal Ensign is the third dam. And Grecian Banner by Hoist the Flag, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you've got a very high-profile family there. The other horse, Elwood Blues, is distinctive in his own right, as well, Sid. Justify over an Arch Mare, Bling Is My Thing. And so, you know, the Roberto line. You go to the Female Family on the tail side. How about a General Meeting mare, Dancing General, the second dam? There's a Nureyev mare, Dance with Shadows, the third. Then an Alleged mare. So there is so much turf in this pedigree that at some point, if Elwood Blues tops out on the main track, I mean, Baffert's going to have to consider him for turf, because he's screaming turf.
Yeah. Definitely, you know, that's a real feature of the Scat Daddy to begin with. You know, just mentioning No Name Never in Europe, how dominating he is. And you know, Mendelssohn's first graded stakes winner here on the turf. Justify already has several on the turf, including that filly for Aidan O'Brien in Europe. The turf is definitely obviously an option, but, you know, obviously for Baffert, it's a last resort or a strategic resort, as he did with that Bayern called Speedboat Beach, by throwing him on the turf next time out to potentially go into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. Not his wheelhouse, but I'm sure this horse, with the performance he had already on dirt, they'll continue to exploit that, because, you know, obviously they want the Baffert modus operandi is to be loaded for the classics.
Sid, don't know if we got a bunch of time to do this, because I got to get to Joe Clancy, but the topic came up about mares being, I don't want to say hustled off to the shed for breeding, but you know, given today's news about the foal crop, the official numbers have been collated for 2022, and the crop dropped another 2.2%, which is a little surprising. Thought maybe we had leveled off and the pendulum might be coming back the other way. You know, but the topic of the vitality, and you've touched on this topic before. We've principally discussed it in reference to Sheikh Hamdan and Sheikh Mo, because the topic was first introduced to me by Kieran McLaughlin. the idea of a philosophy that racing fillies into marehood can be problematic. There's people that believe that if they're on the racetrack, you know, too long, you're going to take away from the vitality that they pass on to their offspring.
Yeah, I mean, these days with so much money to be made, you know, people are racing mares longer. It used to be, particularly in Europe, you know, they would be shuffled off after their three-year-old seasons, primarily because they also, you know, the prospect of racing at four means you have to race against colts. And so, you know, it's tough to do. For example, the Aga Khan after Zarkava won the Arc, undefeated, five starts, you know, obviously she wasn't going to be kept in training anymore and was sent off the stud. But in contrast, you know, Cricket Head, they had Trev in training as an older mare. Judmon, which normally would send mares to the barn breeding shed, you know, when they get a horse like Enable, they roll the dice and raised her. In this country, you know, you know, she was like Belle's the One, still racing. I think the mentality now is to, for the owners who are running, to keep some of these mares going. You know, even if they race at four, they could still go to stud at five. But there is a desire for potential breeders, especially international breeders, to buy these young mares. You know, at Fasig Tipton, you'll see mares in, and those young mares with the graded stakes form the grade one winners. There are always plenty of competition internationally for them. You know, the Japanese, the Europeans, and you know, even domestic buyers. But, you know, the young mare is always more desirable than the old mare, very similar to the concept of the young stallion. They're unproven, and so, you know, anything's possible. Once you establish a track record and, you know, a mare's got, you know, nine foals and, you know, one stakes winner, four unraced, and a couple of winners, you know, it's not as appealing as a young mare with the same type of record, say, that doesn't have a produce record yet. And, of course, you're getting the longevity of having to, you know, being able to breed that mare as well. So, you know, that factors into the price. And those types of mares are always used for, you know, your elite proven stallions and sometimes for the young stallion, you know, the potential supersize of tomorrow coming off the track as well. So that demand is something that Fasig Tipton has really perfected to an art form and made, you know, a major destination after the Breeders' Cup to shop over there.
Now, this kind of bubbled to the surface the other day when I happened to notice, I'm going to forget who we were talking about, the stakes winner in conversation, and it just out of curiosity, a mare that had been in production a long time and finished her career with three straight stake horses, like at age, she must have delivered them at age 16, 17, 18, and it sort of raised my eyebrow. She'd had a couple others, spotty, one early and one mid-career as a broodmare, but then, I mean, to finish with three, you know, with three straight stake horses in the late stages,
yeah,
is notable.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Sid, this was great. We got we shoved a lot in. Let's let the dust settle this week regarding see what kind of reaction there is to this foal crop news. and see if you, you know, see if you get some feedback from some of your breeder client types. And I should mention, I'm very excited about Dallas's firster for Chuck today in the sixth race at Keeneland. There's that full sister that I'm sure you have a hand in, right? Soul Titles Ready.
Yeah, talking about a personal ensign family too.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Everything connects. Everything comes full circle in these discussions. It's unbelievable. I don't know. Dallas can get them ready, and this one's got a license to be okay, and it's sort of a muddled picture. There's only three horses that have run. There's the Rachel Alexandria grandson, Miha, and then there's the University of Kentucky bred Miss Shipman for Lonnie Briley, and then Guns and Lilies for Ian Wilkes, and Ian kind of cold watered this one with us yesterday. So it feels like an open maiden group at Keeneland today. So good luck to Chuck and Dallas in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right, Steve, I'll talk to you next week.
You got it.
It was great talking, bro, and we'll see what happens. It's going to be something to look forward to as we head towards the Breeders' Cup, all this stuff getting in place.
Yeah, no, some divisions are a little, little more kind of fishtail-y than others, like the sprinters. The sprint division feels like it's, a little hungry, but everything else is, and they're still going to let us bet, no matter how moderate they look. We still get to bet on them. 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. Work Thoroughbred Consultants. Join Sid and Roger. Let them peruse your broodmare band and give you the broodmare compatibility analysis and give you the recommendations you need to enhance your production. We're going to stay here. We got about we only have about 10 minutes at the top of the hour. And now, actually, Casey, we may be in a little bit of a pinch because Joe Clancy, who's going to join us, don't know if Joe can go. He's got something. Okay, he's okay. He's okay. You can go ahead and reach Clancy. He's tied up at 11:30. So, and we're still trying to nail down a visit with John Dooley as well. All right, so Joe Clancy will join us next, and we'll get going there. There you go. The one and only. I gotta ask Joe if he heard Guy Torsiglieri yesterday with the hint the hinting right hinting around it. What did you make? What did everybody else make of that cryptic response that I got from Guy when I asked about where the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree is coming from? He said it's closer than you think, and I said, that it wasn't going to come from the Clancy's backyard or neighborhood. And he said, it's closer than you think. So does that mean it's closer to Clancy? Again? Would they go to the same well? They wouldn't go to the same people that had the same tree. Joe Clancy joins us. Joe, did you hear Guy Torsiglieri yesterday with me?
I did not.
Well, every year when Guy joins us in advance of the Far Hills visit, we want to make sure, anybody that's considering going, that they know, the lay of the land and Jersey.
They've got to know what they're getting into.
Exactly. And at the end of every conversation, I bring up that, it's getting close to the time where Guy will announce where the Rockefeller tree is coming from, where the Rockefeller Center, and how last year it came from your neighborhood.
It was big news around here.
Well, absolutely. And at the same time, guy cryptically said to me, it's closer. I said, I can't imagine it's coming from the same, you know, from Joe, from one of the Clancy's, you know, backyards again. And he said, it's closer than you think. And I
wasn't sure.
Yeah. So I said, well, wait a minute. I said, that could mean a lot of things. And I said, do you mean it's coming, it's closer to me up here in upstate? Because they've come up here before.
Right.
Or I said, or does he mean that there's another tree being plucked from, you know, from close by to Joe or Sean? It's very.
I'm gonna have to go on a mission and start looking for white trucks with Torsolari on the side again. My neighbor's lawn is almost recovered from last year's tree removal, but you know, I'll assume it's not from that yard again. But you never know.
What do you think? They got to buy that, right? I mean, they got to buy that tree from nobody's willingly giving up that kind of a mythic tree without compensation.
You would think, but I also know there's a lot of secrecy involved, and people. I don't think you'll ever find out. I know they got to meet Al Roker and, you know, have a big trip to New York City and things like that. So, you know, maybe that's worth it. I'm not sure.
This is I'll tell you what, it's all kinds of response now I'm getting on Twitter and my textings. My man Steve Carlin says that he thinks it's a tree from up here by Saratoga. By where we are, our friend Leslie Knopf, she thinks it's coming from Tarrytown, from Westchester. Interesting.
Right.
It's very exciting.
There were, I'm not letting too many cats out of the bag, but I know Guy was eyeballing a few others around, in the vicinity of the one from last year ago, and one of those might do too, so you wouldn't think they would do that, but you never know.
Wow. All right. I want you to be on the alert.
I'm on the lookout.
I also want everybody to those of you that played along with Dick Powell, you cashed your $4 pick three. The photo is between the two and the three. The two was Harmony and Home, and the three is Sugar Sugar. They were both 3-1, so it's not going to matter. It looked like Sugar Sugar to me. Got the nod, and in fact, that is the way it came out. So Dick cashes with the 4-5-3 pick three here, and he's got it multiple times. So we'll watch for, we'll wait for the payoff. But not big balloons, but it's going to be solid. And of course, the size of those pools at Hong Kong makes it well worthwhile. So good job by Dick. We'll give you the numbers when they come in. Well, we'll keep an eye out for not just for the tree, but any accompanying human interest story, like a baby owl in the tree. I didn't follow that up last year, but you realize. Guy said to people that story, that baby owl did not make the trip on the tree. He maintains that the baby owl showed up when the tree was erected. That owl was not that didn't get a free ride. That it wasn't like Helen Hayes in Airport.
Who knows, right? I do know that I was lucky enough to, Guy handed me one of the Rockefeller Center safety vests that all the guys were wearing last year as a souvenir.
And, wow.
My good friend Tom Law talked me into running a 200-mile relay race around Kentucky a couple of weeks ago, and you had to have a safety vest if you ran at night. And I wore my Rockefeller Center Christmas tree safety vest while running the road to Kentucky a couple of weeks ago.
That's great. That's hysterical. I saw that you two lunatics, I saw that you two maniacs were running.
Yeah, it was wonderful, but also terrible at the same time. But really cool event, and it's the Bourbon Chase it's called. And if you're a runner and have a chance to do it, say yes, because we had a great time and got to see some really cool parts of the state, and it's just a fun time for sure.
Well, and I saw Jessica Paquette was involved in a marathon or half marathon the other day.
Yeah, she was in Chicago running the Chicago Marathon, which I was really impressed with that. That's the Bourbon Chase it tests you in other ways, and not nearly as long of a run, but you do run three times in about 24 hours. So
now there she is crossing the finish line. Actually, very nice. I love it. Good job by Jess. Good job by you guys. Just don't let law convince you to get into a kayak. You got to draw the line somewhere, Joe.
Sounds good. I'll stay away from water sports.
Yeah, I don't know if Clancy and kayaks make. I don't think that jibes. I love it. Too funny. I got to get some early ideas from you. It's one of those nice weekends, the way the calendar fell, that you and Sean are both going to be able to go to Far Hills and to Maryland Million next week.
Yeah, I like it. Hopefully it stays this way, because normally, at least until the last couple of years, we've had to pick between one or the other, and to have them separated does let you get to two really cool racing events, and you know, Far Hills is this weekend and Maryland Million the following, and they're very different, but also, you know, but both kind of great fall celebrations of racing.
Well, and many years we've followed both events, and the Clancys would have to split up the assignments. It was hard, and of course Sean is generally going to get to go to Far Hills, because, you know, River D might have a runner, and then, you know, you would have to go do the Maryland Million, and so this way everybody's happy.
We get to experience both, which is cool. And again, I think it was a product of sort of I wonder how many Saturdays there are in October, but also the Maryland Million has shifted back a week because of a big international three-day event that's in Maryland now, that's actually right here in Fair Hill this weekend. So it might actually stay this way for a little while. So that's a good thing.
Oh, very cool. That is good. I'm actually now... I was being recruited to come for Maryland Million because we're not going to be there this weekend. We've got the baby's first birthday party, which took
priority
in Rochester. Yeah.
Priorities. I like it.
Well, in this particular case, yes. We can't. There's no arguing with this one. So we're off to Rochester. It's going to be nice. I didn't get my own chance at my own children, so having grandchildren via Tina is pretty cool. So
yeah, for sure.
In other words, I have to say yes to everything, Joe.
There are worse assignments, I think. So you're good.
Exactly. Just looking at the scratches, Marty McGee put up the scratches, and I hadn't noticed, but I'll retweet them for everybody, for Keeneland, and a couple of notable ones, actually, particularly Mazuma coming out of that allowance race, the fifth, that good allowance. So I'm going to have to make some adjustments. Anyway, all right, let's talk about what you think here, and you know, it's been a difficult season for the Mean Queen and Kerry Breon. In terms of following up last year's championship season, she will not participate, and kind of leaves the Grand National, Joe, at Snap Decisions dispatch.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was sort of really looking forward to a rematch between the two, which I think would have been great for racing and great for fans to see, and you know, kind of would have been great for both horses too, again, to kind of have another showdown, but not to be. I mean, she ran really well at Belmont, and I know Carrie's sort of just been dealing with stuff all along and trying to get her into a race at 100%, and obviously she's had another little setback, so won't be in the Grand National. It's sad in a way, but you know, that's racing. I think anybody in the game knows that's a possibility whenever you're trying to piece things together, and especially when you've got two really good horses that you're trying to get to the same place, or you know, everybody wants them to get to the same place anyway. Snap Decision, to me, you know, he stands out over the American horses. He's beaten pretty much all of them. And there's a couple foreign horses that are certainly going to make you pay attention a little bit, and obviously he's got to get it done. I think for him, his race at Aqueduct was not, you know, was not, by his standards, was not as good as it can be. So, you know, hopefully he, you know, rebounds from that. Hopefully for them, he rebounds from that and, you know, turns in that big effort that he can produce.
How familiar are you with the international participants?
I mean, a little bit. I was trying to do a little homework, and again, at the moment, I'm still working off an overnight because PPs won't be out till later today. The horse Hewick is very highly rated over there, and you know, he won, has kind of just risen right up through the ranks, and he's got to be respected. He won the Galway Plate in July, which is a you know, very sought after summer kind of target for those types of horses, and would be similar to American conditions in terms of turf, and you know, it's a two and three quarter mile race, and it would be similar to Far Hills. I think the kind of holes or strikes against him to me would be he's done his best running in over their bigger chase fences. And that Galway race is a chase, and over longer trips, that 2 3/4 was actually the shortest race he's run in a while. He's normally a 3-mile-plus course, and the race in Far Hills, the Grand National Saturday, is 2 5/8 on obviously faster ground, you know, and I think he's gonna have to have his track shoes on, you know. I think to stay in touch. There's no doubting his stamina or his quality. I just think he's got to adjust to new fences. If he jumps up over them as much as he does the chase fences in Ireland, he's gonna lose ground at his fences, you know. And then just in terms of pace, I think it's gonna be a faster pace than he's probably used to. And can he stay close enough to then use that stamina he has late against some horses, you know. And we know, you know, Snap Decision is, he's a serious horse, you know. I think if it, without him, you know, I think it then these races are a little easier is the wrong word, but, you know, the European horses like that fit a little better without an American star. You know, we've seen horses come over and win the race that weren't necessarily top horses over there, but they didn't have horses like Snap Decision to run against.
No, well framed. The money, one of the things we talked about with Guy yesterday, this kind of money not as widely available. So as Guy Torsiglieri gears up the purses again and restores them in the direction that they were headed before pandemic, these will continue to be an attractive target for the international set. Touch on Joe some of the other spots. We didn't, you know, we pretty much focused yesterday with Guy on the Grand National, but you know, nice field size for the most part, and you know, that includes earlier on the card the Appleton. You got 7 in there, 8 in the Gladstone, the traditional 3-year-old group, which includes a filly, Solib, for Jordan Wyckoff and Carrie Breon. And Teddy Davies aboard gets at the least gets 7 pound on the weight front. What else stood out to you the way these came up?
Yeah, it's interesting to see. I mean, in some cases, the fields might be a little small, really, but I think that's sort of what happens when you get to these races of quality, and some of these horses had, again, guys putting together a card with opportunities for everybody. So I think you know, some of the horses, there's a four-year-old hurdle stake, for example, that might have sent a few other horses to the Foxbrook Novice if they weren't having it. But I think it's, you know, I think, again, trying to create opportunity where they're, where it's needed, it's created some good races. Proven Innocent runs in the four-year-old race, and he comes off the Novice win at Aqueduct over the Mean Queen. I think he's, you know, he's a standout in there. Probably the only, it might be a little, listeners will find it strange, might be a little short for him going to a 2 and an 8. He's an out-and-out stayer, just watching him. He's won the last two he's won. He's not getting there till the final five or six strides, basically. So it'd be interesting to see how he plays in there. The three-year-old race, Gordonelli comes over with a horse who's won twice already over there, the Insider, who I think would be, he's you know, he'd be as short a price favorite as there would be on the whole card, I think. Sean McDermott has a horse, Pleading Addy, who won at Shawan Downs, who was probably pretty nice, but the Irish horses that have run a couple times have a little bit of an advantage. The Novice, to me, is really wide open. You know, Carey Bryant's got Halya Budd, who's run well enough to certainly be a player. Awaken comes out of a maiden race. Sean and Ten Strike Racing are partners on that horse, which is, I think that's interesting that they're taking a chance there to step up a couple conditions and take on some horses like that. The Appleton ratings horse, we got Theocrat, ratings race, we got Theocrat coming back from, the win at Saratoga. I think he's very interesting for Carey. Not Radishian, who's been running against much tougher, sort of dropped into that level now.
Yeah.
It's a NSA rating system race at 130 or down, and he drops into there, which I think he'll appreciate kind of the class relief. Then we've got a 14 horse flat race, which ought to be really interesting, I think. $100,000 2 mile turf stakes. Cross Border will be the name everybody recognizes that he's now in Carey Bryant's barn. And, you know, maybe not as good as he was, but I think he'll take a lot of beating in there.
You would think, but there's a couple of horses. How about Dickinson with Royne? One of the fun parts of this, Joe, how do you expect the three flat riders to negotiate the course? It should be interesting. Isaac Castillo and Nick Juarez and Fergal Lynch come to Far Hills.
I would want to make sure they walk the course, because I think that's pretty important. It's not your typical racetrack turf course by any means, you know. So I think they would, and the start, I think, again, those guys need to be on their game in terms of the start, because there's no gate. Obviously, it's a 2 mile race, so it's not that crucial, but I think with 14, you could end up with some traffic issues. I think you touched on a little. Michael Dickinson, Greg Sacco, Kent Sweezy, just some trainers like that coming in with horses that add some interest to this. The race is run in memory of John Forbes, a New Jersey trainer and longtime sort of leader of the horsemen there. I think that's a great touch. And I'm with you. I you know, Cross Border to me is beatable on his form, meaning he hasn't been as good as he can be, obviously, and there's a few others in there that would make you pay attention and hopefully would be pricing. There is wagering on this, on these things. So, and a 14 horse field would interest anybody. Small Hope from Kent Sweezy's barn to me is a little interesting. Been running long, you know, maybe not at the quality or level of Cross Border, but, interesting. Michael Dickinson would be interesting for sure. And even Greg Sacco's horses, they probably haven't been as, again, they're stepping up in terms of taking on a horse like Cross Border, but I think they would pay attention. And then you've got a bunch of mostly jump, you know, trainers, horses, but you know they're fit enough to go the 2 miles and handle the hills and all the other things, and those are the question marks with some of the flat horses. Jack Fisher comes in with Mystical Man, whose form is, you know, his platform is pretty good. Fearsome won this race going a mile and a half a couple of years ago. He's probably not as good as he was then, but is certainly a horse to think about as well.
Joe, one other name. There's actually a couple of names that I was surprised. I'm a little surprised that Chucky Lawrence didn't show up with something for this.
Yeah, and I know they had, the nominations had a few extra horses in it, like that horse Eons was nominated from Arnaud Delacour, but he ended up running last week. I think some people were looking at it and, you know, maybe saw other opportunities show up before, the, you know, before this. I think the 2 miles certainly would question, you know, is a question to some people. You know, they actually ended up with 4 horses that are going to get excluded, which, you know,
right.
I mean, it sounds like a good thing to have a full field, but it's also you're sending 4 home, you know, which is a little bit of a shame, really. But Clubbing is a horse people recognize was with Suge McGee. He's been purchased by Leslie Young. He won at Kentucky Downs, but that was a maiden race, if I'm not if I'm right. And again, he's stepping way up in terms of taking on a horse like Cross Border. It'll be a fun race to watch. And I'm with you, the Flatjacks have, in some ways, they've got an advantage in terms of finishing and all those other things. And the other ways, they're at a disadvantage in terms of the start, the distance, and just the way that course is going to play. It'll be kind of fun to watch. We were talking about runners. Nick Juarez, he's a big runner, so maybe he'll get out there and have a little bit of a run around there to get a look at the place to get a feel for the course too.
It should be especially with the wagering opportunities and with the coverage. You know, one of the things I was a little surprised that Fox is going to show everything. Which could be a boon, Joe, right, to the jump set.
Yeah, I mean, any kind of like when the steeplechase races are at Saratoga or Aqueduct this year or Belmont, you know, the extra coverage like that is good for the, you know, it's just exposure that they don't normally get. And I think I've already had some people inquiring from overseas about how to watch it and, you know, just because of the horses like Hewick and some of the others that are running, that there's a lot of interest over there. It's going to just be folded into the regular, you know, America's Day at the Races show. Acacia Courtney and Richard Migliori are going to be at Far Hills, and I'll be on the desk with Acacia. I think we're still sorting out how everything works exactly, but we'll be able to react on the fly and make it work. It should be a great day. I'm really looking forward to it. I got to do some homework though.
Well, come on, we're counting on it. And are they? I know that they've got Acacia and Mig. What about Talking Horses? Are they going to import your opinion for, you know, for this somehow?
I'll try to send some opinions over to make sure they have it. Obviously, we do on our website at thisishorseracing.com, we'll do a full set of picks for where Sean, Tom, and I will take a crack at it. You know, I know last year, I'm still waiting on some of the details, but because I think today is scratch day for the steeplechases, so they got to sort out, make sure they've got everything where they want it. But, yeah, last year they had three of the Far Hills races, I think, in a pick five. And, you know, it would be fun to see if they can do that again, especially
right.
If you can kind of pull that flat race into it. And, you know, maybe the last 3 races at Far Hills, they're the 3 biggest fields, would be fun to do.
You'll be able to watch it as part of the coverage on Saturday in New York and across the country on America's Day at the Races.
I guess it's Fox Sports 2 to start, and then, or Fox Sports 1 to start,
yes.
Then Fox Sports 2. I also know there's some potential monkey wrenches with the baseball schedule and how some of these teams do. You know, hopefully the Phillies sweep, and we don't have to worry about it, but we'll see.
we're rooting for that. That'd be all right. That'd be all right. And then we're all geared up, of course, Joe, I'm assuming that you're with your brother, EAG, LES?
Man, yeah, Sunday could be a big day in South Philly because it's Eagles, Cowboys, and game four of that. Game four of that Phillies Braves series.
Well, we we're going to be in Rochester. We'll be coming home from Rochester.
Home from Far Hills. I don't remember the year exactly, but it would have been, you know, when the Phillies were rolling. On the way down 95, I just drove. The Phillies were playing in the playoffs, and in the middle of the game, those streets are kind of deserted. So I just drove and parked right on the street, and you could hear the crowd and listen to the game on the radio. It was actually kind of fun. So maybe we can pull that off again on the way back.
I love it. That's very cool.
We pick up a cheesesteak and tailgate, right? That's the way it goes.
I was going to say, go right over to Oregon Avenue, go to Tony Luke's, and you're all set. And then go to Pops for water ice. All you could want. I love it. Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe Clancy, 65, and the coverage on this is horseracing.com website, the basically Saratoga special for the rest of the year. Joe, have a great time down there, and I appreciate the check-in. Is Joe gone? Was that it? that was an abrupt departure by Joe Clancy, everybody. Let's take a break. Second of the morning. We have got to get Seth Merrow in here, but first we got to get to Indiana, and we're trying to round up. Well, there's you know, the usual suspects. Rachel. I know Rachel yesterday was under the weather, and John Dooley I cannot reach, so. We may, we'll try. We'll see. We'll get somebody. Because the card is too good. There's one scratch out of the stake, out of the sixth race stake. Scratch the six. Doc Gorham, Sweeping Justice, comes out. But everybody else is intact. It's a good. They're both good races. Both of the IOT BA. Phillies go first at 5 o'clock. And then the boys at 5:36. And Keeneland will go over with Seth, I think. I assume Seth did Keeneland. I should have asked, but if he didn't, then I'll give you the details. Back after this, we're into hour three. Wednesdays at the races. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups.